Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. On our last Searchlight program, we saw David getting himself into a perilous predicament. Throughout our study in 1 Samuel, we have seen David doing so well in his relationship with the Lord. He is a great example for all of us. But David also makes some big blunders. We are looking at one of those blunders in our story in chapter 27. King Saul has been chasing David and trying to kill him for quite some time. So David finally makes a decision to go to enemy territory. He comes to the land of the Philistines and makes peace with Achish, their king. We are learning that it is never right to go to the enemy's territory. Let's now join Pastor John and see how David's situation keeps getting worse.
So he was there for those months, a year and 4 months, or 16 months in totality. Well, while he's there, watch what happens. This intrigues me. David and his men, while they're there at Ziklag, they get up and they invade the Geshurites and the Gezerites. They were a very old tribe, the old Gezers. They were there, and yeah. And also the Amalekites. For those nations were, watch this. What does it say? Those nations were what? Old, right. So there you have it. They were of old. And David smote them. Now, interesting, because these were groups that were living in the southern regions of Judah and the northern parts of Philistine country. So David is up at Ziklag, and what does he do? He and his boys mount up on their horses, so to speak. They grab their swords, if you would, and they begin to launch these guerrilla raids on these Canaanite tribes that were there in the southern area of Judah. Tribes of old that were never dealt with or rooted out by the Jews as they were supposed to have been. David does this. So he launches these raids, these guerrilla raids, these clandestine excursions. And he goes on the war path. He smites them. And he didn't leave man, verse 9, or woman alive. He took away the sheep, the oxen, the asses, the camels, and the apparel. And he returned and he came to Achish. Achish said, "Hey, where have you made a road today? Or where you've been cruising, buddy? What you been doing, David?" So David and his boys go out on these raids. They smite these Canaanites, these other tribes that are in that region around Ziklag where he is living. And then he goes to Gath, the city. And Achish says, "Where you been? What you been up to, Dave?" And David says, "Well, I've been against the south of Judah, against the south of the Jerahmeelites, and against the south of the Kenites." "David, that's not true, David. David, you were slaughtering Canaanites." And David here is saying, "I was out in the area of Judah." And the implication is here, the implication is I was fighting residents that are in those areas that are under the control of or a part of Israel, the tribe of Judah, you see, not enemies. This was the implication he makes. Achish is thrilled about that. And David, in order to make sure that he wasn't discovered, he saved, verse 11, neither man nor woman alive, to bring tidings to Gath, saying, lest they should tell on us, saying, "So did David, and so will be his manner all the while he dwells in the country of the Philistines." And Achish believed David, saying, "He hath made his people Israel utterly to abhor him. Therefore he shall be my servant forever." Achish says, "Man, David is killing his own countrymen. He's launching attacks against these cities where his countrymen are dwelling, you see. Oh, this is great. I really have a winner here with David. And David, well, you see, here's what David's doing. Technically, what he's saying could be true. He was in those areas geographically that he spoke of. Those were areas in verse 10 that really he did and was moving around. But the implication was, I'm killing Israelites, and that wasn't so. And to make sure he wasn't discovered and found out, he slaughtered every man and woman and child, lest anybody say to Achish, who would escape from David's marauders, you see, David's killing us. What have we done? We're not Israelites. We're not Philistines. What's the deal? Why is he? And Achish would then turn against David. David has a propensity to lie. From the very get-go, he does. Remember there at the table of Saul, when he's there playing the harp for Saul, and Saul throws spears at him, and David says to Jonathan, your dad's out to get me. No, he's not. That's just pops throwing spears. No, I'm telling you, he's mad, and I'll prove it to you, Jonathan. Here's what you do. You tell your dad that I have business in Bethlehem, family issues down there, and I won't show up for dinner. I'll be out here in the field hiding, and if your dad gets ticked off, then that will be proof that your dad is out to get me. Do you recall that story? That's a lie. Just a plain old, flat-out lie. And then when it's discovered that it's true that Saul was out to get him, what does he do? He goes to Nob, and he tells the high priest Ahimelech, when Ahimelech says, what are you doing here, David? Why aren't you with your entourage, with your bodyguards? After all, you're Saul's son-in-law. You're part of his court. Oh, well, I'm on a secret errand, David says. That's a lie. He's running from Saul. You know the story. He's just plain old, flat-out lying, you see. And later on, you know, it gets worse with Uriah the Hittite, the husband of Bathsheba, when he calls Uriah in from battle and says, well, I just want to give you some R&R. You know the story, or you soon will. It's a lie. And over and over and over again, and here as well, David is just plain old flat out lying. Now you say, well, how could this be? A man after God's own heart, a man that's used so mightily. Good news for you. God uses imperfect people. God uses flawed folks. Aren't you glad? Because you see, I hate to tell you this, but you're flawed too. We all have flaws. We all have weaknesses. To others, we say, well, how could God use him or her or them? I don't understand. How could God use you? We say to others around us. But see, God sees the heart. Not justifying David's lying, it's going to get him in all kinds of trouble. 85 priests are dead because he lied to the high priest there at Nob. He's going to find that he has to ultimately have Uriah murdered because he was untruthful with him too. On and on it goes. This is not a justification for lying. It's just an indication that God sees a man's heart, that God uses flawed people like you and like me, you see. It's amazing. But it's interesting because this was David's weakness. He really was given over to this. In fact, he finally cries out in Psalm 119, verse 29, remove me from the way of lying lips. Oh, Lord, take care of this. Finally, at some point in David's life, in Psalm 119, David cries, remove me from lying lips, Lord. Take this away. I'm sick of this. Lying lips. Interesting. This just cracked me up. It's a story that was in the news a couple of weeks ago. A true story. A Charlotte, North Carolina lawyer. Now, I don't know why I thought of this in relation to that, but speaking of truth and stretching it and twisting and modifying and speaking the truth, but it's not really the truth. That's what David said. Well, I've been down south in Judah. David, that's not what you were up to, and you know it. Well, there's a guy in North Carolina, a lawyer. He purchased a box of very rare and expensive cigars, then insured them against fire. Within a month, having smoked his entire stockpile of these great cigars, and without yet having made even his first premium payment on the policy, the lawyer files a claim against the insurance company. In his claim, the lawyer stated the cigars were lost, quote, in a series of small fires, end quote. The insurance company refused to pay, citing the obvious reason that the man had consumed the cigars in the normal fashion. The lawyer sued because the policy didn't say that specifically and won. In delivering the ruling, the judge agreed with the insurance company that the claim was frivolous, but the judge stated nevertheless that the lawyer held a policy from the company in which the company had warranted that the cigars were insurable and also guaranteed that it would insure them against fire without defining exactly what is considered to be unacceptable fire. And the judge ruled that the company was obligated to pay the claim. So rather than endure a lengthy and costly appeal process, the insurance company paid the claim in full. Now here's a lawyer. Technically, it's true that, you know, the cigars were insured against loss, theft, fire, but that's not honest. But wait, here's the best part of the story. After the lawyer cashed the large check, the insurance company had him arrested on 24 counts of arson. With his own insurance claim and testimony from the previous case being used against him, the lawyer was convicted of intentionally burning his insured property and was sentenced to 24 months in jail and a $24,000 fine. This is a true story. It's amazing. Isn't that great? He spends 2 years in jail, has to pay $24,000. Arson. They nailed him. See, we think we're tricky and clever, you know, and David no doubt over and over again thinks, well, I'm being tricky here when I'm not telling Ahimelech, the high priest, what I'm really doing here. But ultimately, David gets caught as 85 lives are lost. Priests' heads are lopped and blood flows. And on the story goes with David. Every time he does this, it seems as though he's getting away with this, but ultimately it comes back and bites him badly. See, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Now, David's doing this. Now, here's the curious thing here. What's David up to? I mean, okay, so he's launching these midnight raids on the enemies of Israel and then tells Achish that he's actually, or implying that he's actually attacking the people of Israel. What's he doing? A couple of things here that are interesting to me. First of all, it shows me that energetic activity is not a sign of true spirituality. See, David is on the warpath energetically, launching these raids, doing that stuff, because no doubt he has at this point a guilty conscience. He feels bad. He knows he's living in Philistine country. He knows he's allied with Achish. He knows he's where he ought not to be. So what does he do? He puts it in overdrive. Does all kinds of stuff. I know he's thinking, well, you know, even though I'm out of fellowship and I've left the country I'm supposed to be in, and I've turned my back on the people that I'm to be linked to, well, I can make up for that. And that's what people do. Okay, so I've left the church. I'm not in fellowship. I'm mad at Christians. I don't want anything to do more. But I'm going to join Kiwanis Club, you see. And I'll get real active in the Goodwill organization. Or I'll become a Rotarian or whatever it is. And I'll get real active and I'll do all kinds of good stuff. And why? Why are you doing all that? Oftentimes, outward activity can be a sign of real carnality. A person that no longer is at peace with the Lord. Just enjoying spending time there in the presence of the Lord. No longer are they just enjoying their walk with Jesus. But now, they're on their horse. They're doing this. They're doing that. And I have monitored this in my own life. And I tell you it's true. That oftentimes when a person is the most active, it's not because they're the most spiritual. But it might be because they're trying to overcome their own awareness of carnality. Be careful about that. Be aware of that. And secondly, note this as well. Success is not necessarily an indication of spirituality. David was successful here. David was succeeding. He was winning every battle, conquering every village, but yet, was he doing what was right in God's sight? No, you see. So don't think that because a person is active, doing all kinds of, quote, good things, close quote, that it means that he or she is spiritual or walking in the Spirit or full of the Spirit. It doesn't mean that necessarily at all. It can be an indication of covering carnality. And don't think because a person is successful that it means that, well, hey, that person or that group must be really right on because look how successful they are or he is or she might be. David's successful here, but he's not right. It's 16 months of a backslidden condition. Although he's very active and he's very successful, he's very wrong. He is in a backslidden condition ultimately. He's where he ought not to be. So here he is. He's there on these war paths going back and telling Achish, the king of the Philistines in that region who resided in Gath, I've been launching war against the southern part of Judah, against the Israelites. And Achish believed David. And Achish was thrilled. Verse 12, he has made his people to utterly abhor him. He's going to be my servant forever. Well, it came to pass in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for warfare to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, know thou assuredly that thou shalt go with me to battle, you and your men. And David said to Achish, surely you know what I can do. You know that I'm a can-do kind of guy. And Achish said to David, I'm going to make you keeper of my head. You're going to be the head hog, the head dog. You're going to be the keeper of my head, my personal bodyguard. I've been watching you, David. And I know what you can do. And you've been out there battling your own people. I trust you. Achish is saying, now we're going to go war. I'm going to get the Philistine army mobilized. And I want you and your guys to join us. And we're going to go kill some Israelites. What do you say? And you're going to be right beside me. Uh-oh, David. Were you counting on this when you backslid? Were you counting on this when you cut yourself off from your people, when you went into Philistine country, when you backed off, when you backed away? Is this where you thought you would be, David? Oh, the pressure was off, wasn't it, David? Saul didn't chase you anymore when you were in Philistine country. But there's a bigger problem. Now you are going to have to be Judas Iscariot, and you're going to have to come against the people of God. There's a price to pay for your 16-month vacation in pleasure land, buddy. There's always a price to pay. Every temptation that the devil sends my way, every temptation the devil sends your way is always packaged as a present. It's gift wrapped. It's beautiful. Oh, how wonderful. This is great. We're going to cruise. Here's your own city, Ziklag. You'll be safe there. Saul's not after you anymore. And then 16 months later, the bill comes in. Come on, David, let's go kill Israelites. What do you say? And David here says, you know what I can do. You know how talented I am. That's right. That's why you're going to be right beside me. You're going to be right here with me, right there in the battle, David. I'm counting on you to do some heavy-duty damage, you see. Well, David's stuck. The plot thickens. Now, while the Philistines are mobilizing for war, something interesting happens. Samuel, the prophet, verse 3, was dead. All Israel had lamented him and buried him at Ramah in his own city. Saul had put away, King Saul had dealt with those that had familiar spirits or those that were involved in witchcraft, necromancy, fortune-telling, all those kinds of demonic activities. He put out those with familiar spirits and the wizards and all the rest out of the land, all the psychics, you see. The Philistines now gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul he gathered all of Israel together and they pitched in Gilboa. Now, for you Bible guys, this is interesting. David is down south, you see, in Ziklag. He's reporting to Achish, the king of Gath, also in the southern part of the country. And now there's going to be a war between the Philistines and Saul and the Israelites. But it's up, way up north, Mount Gilboa. Now, if you've been to Israel, you know the layout of the land. Mount Gilboa is just south of the Sea of Galilee. This means that the Philistines had really penetrated Israel to the max. They were in control, and Saul is boxed in. Saul is way up north. The Philistines have been making real inroads, and now they're forcing Saul into this final battle there at Mount Gilboa, way up north. So Saul is freaked out. Saul realizes the Philistines have really taken control. Saul's in trouble. So he gets his boys together, and they're way up north in Gilboa, way far away from where Saul would want to be. They're up north in a corner, Mount Gilboa, you see. And Saul, verse 5, he sees the army of the Philistines, and he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. Now think with me. Saul is boxed in. The Philistines are dominating the land. He's freaked out. Why? How could this happen? Now listen to me. How could this happen? Saul, how did you lose control of the land of Israel? How did you lose control of the situation militarily? Well, there's a very simple reason. He was spending his time fighting the wrong enemy. He was chasing David down. He was consumed with getting David. He was determined to get David. He was envious of David, threatened by David, critical of David. Listen to me. He was fighting the wrong enemy all these months and years. And so now there's a real war to fight, and he is completely, totally unprepared. If I fight the wrong enemy, these little picayune-ish little problems that crop up amongst Christians, see. If I get all tangled up in, well, this person's feelings are hurt and that person doesn't feel used and this person is mad because we have white candles instead of brown and everything else. If I spend my time fighting those battles, getting upset with or getting involved in little skirmishes within the Christian community, listen to me, when that happens, when the real war comes, I'm going to be completely, totally, absolutely unprepared because I've been fighting the wrong battle. I've been engaged in the wrong conflict. Saul, why are you chasing your brother, David, your countryman, David? What are you? Even David asked that question. Why are you after me, Saul? But Saul was obsessed, and that can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to us. We become critical of other Christians, churches, ministries, people, family, whatever it might be, and we're fighting the wrong battle. And what happens is when the real deal comes, when there's a real war against the forces of hell, the kingdom of damnation and death and darkness, we're unprepared.
This is a very important point because it is a mistake that we so often make. We fight and argue with other Christians about silly things, and then we find ourselves unprepared for the battle against the real enemy. It would be wise for us to take stock of the battles we are fighting and see if they are battles that are directed by God. We will continue this story on our next program, so please join us again then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
Most of us desire to spend more time in prayer, just talking with the Lord and hearing from Him. But we often struggle in this area of prayer. In order to help us have a more consistent and effective prayer life, Pastor John has a book called Praying Through the Tabernacle. This book shows us a model of prayer that is based on the Old Testament tabernacle. This is a very practical tool for everyone who desires an intimate walk with the Lord. You may order Praying Through the Tabernacle from the Searchlight website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.